What's up, y'all?
What's up, my nigga? Where you coming from?
The house, trying to find something to do. It's weak as fuck.
Shit, it's slow as fuck.
Dead
out
as
here.
Fuck. Ain't nothing to do.
Yeah, what's up? Y'all got some ends and shit?
Wow, what's up? You want to get some weed?
Hell yeah, let's get this dirt, bro.
Come
the
fuck
that
down,
shit y'all
bud.
Playing.
That's RBL.
That's the RBL.
Yeah, oh shit, what? I got this new shit. I thought you niggas.
Yeah, I heard they got some new
hell
shit.
Hell nah.
You ain't heard
slap. Hell yeah, let's slap that shit in.
Let me get all that shit sad.
Ready? Get ready. It's time for your weekly dose of unembellished banter. 1.5 hours of music, politics, and news. Real, raw, intoxicating. This show is definitely not for the weak. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome the hosts of Live with Philip Anthony and Valerie Denise Jones.
Oh my gosh, I can't get enough of that. Guys, welcome to Big Exclusives. I am Valerie Denise Jones. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I've had a really, really, really good day. It started out very eventful, and now, oh my goodness, a very, very interesting interview today, RBO Posse. Can't wait to have this conversation because I think that we've got a lot of juice for our young people today. So we're going to get really real before we get really raw. And I'm really, really excited about that. 929-477-1167. Appreciate everybody who is on the board, also the people in the chat room and our international listeners. Don't know what we would do without you. Now, time flies by, so what I want to do at this time is go right on and open up our guest mic, 929-727-929-727. How are you doing?
Hey, Mr. C, what's up, nigga? You got 5 bones on this gram?
Yeah, nigga, you know I'm fake.
All right, then, let's bounce the cashmere.
All right.
Hey, what's up, nigga? Hey, who got weed?
Hey, what you
man, I need some of that dank right, straight right. I can't fuck with none of that light, that shit, that flow.
Man, all I got is bang, bang.
Black C in the house. Yes, yes, yes. I'm really excited to talk to you today. You seem very chill, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I'm a laid-back person.
Yeah. So I want to first remind everybody, we did some postings and all of that, but RBL Posse was a gangster rap group from the Hunters Point section of San Francisco, California. The members were Black C, Mr. C, Hitman, and they were active from 1991 to 2003. So I appreciate your contributions to the music industry. Definitely that. There are a lot of people standing on your shoulders as we speak. So yeah, man, you definitely paved the way for a lot of people. And I listened to your songs today, and I know that you said that you really liked two of them, but I think my favorite, probably because I'm from the South, was Bounce to This. That was my favorite, absolute favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite a fun song. So, yeah. So how are you feeling? What's your mood like right now? Because I want to ask you a couple tough questions, and then I'm going to bring in, I told you, our person, our music genius guru here in just a few seconds.
Okay.
Because he
Well, I'm feeling good.
Definitely,
you know, I'm turning up out here. It's almost 100 degrees, it seems like, right now out here in Antioch. So, yeah, it's, it's just hot. But besides that, yeah, the mood is good, you know.
Yeah, you guys getting ready for the BET Awards. How far are you from that?
L.A., I'm about 5 hours away.
Okay. All right. Do you still go to award shows? I know you guys did very, very well.
Nah,
relates to
all
your achievements.
I used to, but it's just a little too hectic nowadays. With the young, let the youngsters have their fun and do it. You know, a lot of people hang out around here now in L.A. I just don't care too much for the parties and the late night life. You know, more or less, I'm booked for a show or something like that. But besides that, I'd rather sit at the house with my little dogs and kids, you know.
Right. Yeah, as I read the wiki page, I almost wanted to, like, fly over there where you are and give you a hug because it's like, wow, there was so much, like, there was, like, a time in your life when everything was really, like, you could either celebrate or, you know, there were incidents in your life that, as I was reading, I almost cried. But it reads this way. So it says, RBO Posse was formed in 1991 by Black C and Mr. C. The first release was self-produced. Don't Give Me No Bama came out in a minute record and made the Billboard magazine. Congratulations. Hot Rap Singles Chart peaking number 16. The two albums followed. A Lesson to Be Learned, which peaked at number 60 on the Billboard magazine. And then also Ruthless by Law, which surpassed their debut album. And it peaked at 23. Also made the Billboard 200. All right. In 1995, you produced a solo record for the group Hitman, Ricky Hurd, Call, Solo Creep. Your impressive sales for regional indie releases attracted interest from Atlanta Records, subsidiary Big Beats, signed the group before you could deliver your album. Mr. C was shot 9 times in Cure Know Your Home on New Year's Day in 1996 on Harbor Road. This murder set off a wave of retaliation killings in the section of the city. Black C also lost an eye during that time in a drive-by shooting. Now, you're doing so well, and you're still in the area, because I know everybody asks, why did Nipsey Hussle stay? So why does someone who is so successful continue to stay in the area, not knowing if it's their celebrity, you know, will be the cause of someone's jealousy or possibly their death?
Yeah, at the time, you just don't be realizing the love that you get and the fake love. But a lot of this stuff was dudes that I grew up with since I was knee high. Like our moms called each other sisters. We called each other cousins, and the area is just, you're so used to it, you know what I mean? Even just like with the killings and shootings that was going on, you wake up, you hear the cars burning rubber, loud music, gunshots, you grow so immune to it that you don't really realize how dangerous it is outside your front door, because you be out there, you're used to it every day, you're used to seeing, you know, dudes out there, you're used to seeing drug addicts, you know, so... Once you grow immune to it, it's kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird thing to where you just don't see it. Like, I didn't see the fake love like until the success started coming. And even then, after the success was coming in, we was trying to bring dudes in and put dudes on and not realizing that they was really trying to, they was plotting to really try to, you know what I mean? They wanted to see us fall, basically. They didn't really want to see us progress, and they thought that we was going to blow up, get all this money, leave out the hood, and leave them. And so a lot of dudes start trying to create their own little wave, start trying to create their own labels. And the dudes that we actually fell out with was dudes that we actually tried to help get them established. You know, it was this record label called Big Block Records that was actually two of the dudes on the album, on my first album cover, is the dudes who we fell out with, who was on my first album cover. They wasn't on the album. I just had them take pictures with us, and they basically started their own label, and I helped them start it. I helped them get artists. I helped them do all that, but the whole time, they was like just harboring this jealousy towards really Mr. C, because Mr. C didn't grow up in the projects up there where I did. He was kind of brought in later on, and they were just real jealous of him, and it's just something that you just don't see. I didn't see it until actually I got out and really started, when I moved out, bought me a house out in the suburbs, and I really got a chance to get some idle time, because I was just in that fast lane, just in that rush, and you just don't be paying attention to it. But once I really got away from all that, had my daughter sat back and just really start analyzing everything, that's when I started seeing, it was just like, man, it ain't nothing over there. You know, that's government. Probably we think we own them streets over there, and it's like we over there fighting for a neighborhood that we don't own, the government own, and it's actually public housing. It's just like, it's a temporary thing. We don't realize, like, man, this is a crutch. We're supposed to use this to get on our feet and try to progress and go buy us some property or you know, go get a house somewhere and you know, try to move forward. So we don't really look at it like that. We think we actually own them project buildings and own them streets, and we don't. Now, I didn't realize that until I got my own house and I moved out to Antioch. And now I realize, I mean, the only thing I would die for is my kids and my own property, just trying to defend my own property out here. But, you know, to answer the question, though, it's just something like, you know, like with Nipsey, you just don't know. You feel like it's real love. You know, you're trying to help people. You're trying to create jobs, trying to put people in position to get out the hood with you. And you just always have a few people that's on the sideline who just, instead of them participating, they want to go against the grain. Excuse me. They want to go against the grain. So, yeah, you know, we went through it, man. I mean, me, myself, I went through a lot. And that was just even before Mr. C, even just before the RBO stuff, just the gangbanging stuff all from, like, 87 to 91. It was just, you know, just problems going in and out of log cabin. A lot of my friends going to YA, lost a couple friends to drive-bys, and a couple friends got framed for murders they didn't do. And went and did 25, 26 years and just recently coming home and stuff. So it's, you know, we just don't see it. We'd be over there blind. And just and when that rush is going on, that living in that fast lane and that fast pace moving, you don't get a chance to sit and see it. The only time people really sit down is when they get in jail. Then they're like, oh, man, I'm about to change my life. I'm about to do this when I get out. I'm gonna, you know, because you got time to kind of, you know, look at yourself and really analyze everything that was going on when you was out on the streets. And you're like, okay, when I get out, I'm about to change this and change that. Well, as soon as you jump back out, hop in that fast lane, you forget everything you said you was going to do, you know, when you was in jail, you know. And that's the only time we get a break to really sit back and think about everything. And, yeah, that's what I did. You know, when I got out of log cabin, I signed up starting up the group and got into the music stuff, but... Yeah, it's just crazy how it is in the hood, man. It's just one of those things, man. And yeah, it was some hard lessons I had to learn, but you know, I'm blessed now to even be here today after everything we've been through.
So I appreciate how you were able to pontificate, you know, like just the. How aggressive the environment was and the lessons that you learned. So what happened from 96 to 2003 when Hitman was killed? Like, had you moved out at that point, or how is it he still ended up in the, you know, in the game, so to speak, and then ended up losing his life? That's a nice little time span from.
Well, what happened was we all had moved out. You know, we left the projects. Like I said, I bought a house, and I was in the process of buying a house in 95. I had put out Hitman album in 95, and it did good. Mm-hmm. We did that independently out the trunk. He sold like a little over 120-some thousand units. So we got paid real well off of that City Hall Records. Walter, actually, we didn't do a deal with him, but we did like a distribution deal with him to where he was just exclusive distributor for us. And yeah, he paid us real well, so we was on our way out the hood, and that's what sparked the problems with Mr. C and everything, because we was in the process of inking a deal with Atlantic that was worth a couple million, and then I had the independent thing going on with Hitman where we was making some good money with that. So I started realizing, like, yeah, I need to move these guys out. It was just too many distractions. It was kind of hard for Mr. C and Hitman to start making it to the studio. They'd be out there hanging out. You know, it was the females, the partying. So I was like, let me go in and get a compound, you know, miles away. You know, so I ended up going out to Antioch, which I never heard of. Thank God I had a good manager at the time who was like, man, you know, you need to go out to this new suburb they're developing. You know, the houses is real cheap. Like 169,000, you can get, you know, 3,000, 4,000 square feet, and they're going to be worth, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 in years. And, you know, and I listened to them, and thank God I did make that move. So I ended up getting a house. It's like about an hour away from San Francisco. So I moved out, and, you know, the thing happened with Mr. C, and then the process of me getting a house, when Mr. C died in January, I ended up moving in April. We ended up closing the deal on the house, and I ended up moving in April. And everything was fine. Like they said, yeah, it was a bunch of gang wars going on behind Mr. C. Death. It was a lot of people that done died, you know, like almost 40, 50 people, like between that same neighborhood that just, you know, all grew up with each other. That just, it was just crazy. And, yeah, basically we moved out here, and I had all my groups, NOH, military-minded, a lot of groups that I was dealing with from the city out here. And with Hitman, it just got born, you know, like the suburb is born. You know, if you ain't working, and, you know, I was too busy running the label, but they just sitting around with just idle time, just, you know, people just got kind of bored, and it was just like, man, I got to go back to the hood. And, you know, I'm just going to go back over there. I got to want to go over there and see what's going on. I want to go back and go hustle. It was just, you know, they all had different reasons. Him, my brother, and them, a few other mother folks and cousins, they all kind of went back and went back to the neighborhood and started hanging out. And once you a celebrity, you know, you become the main target. And so when Hitman went over there, you know, I used to tell him every day, like, bro, you need to come back out here. You know, we need to work on this new album. And he'd come do a song or two here and there and leave and go right back over there. So, and, you know, it just, he was involved in a couple of shootings where people shot at him and kind of didn't get him, and, you know, a few close calls. But, yeah, they ended up catching up to him, and he was in a car driving by this neighborhood. It's like an enemy. It wasn't the actual enemy, or the dudes that we grew up with, but it was like some of the allies or whatever you want to call it. They seen him drive by in the car, and they jumped in the car and pretty much sped up on the side of him and shot him while he was driving in the car. And actually, up to first, I think they let off like two shots, but the one shot got lucky and got through the car, hit him dead in the head, and killed him instantly. So, yeah, it was just one of those things. I used to try to tell him all the time, like, bro, don't go back over there, bro, don't go back over there. Ain't nothing but death in jail, man. You know, everybody went to the feds. You know, my brother was in the feds at the time, and I was just trying to use him as an example. Like, man, we just lost two people. You know, and we just lost, you know, a couple people to the feds that then went to jail behind this gangbanger stuff. We done got, you know, they done charged in with the RICO Act and all that. And it's kind of like, dude, we done escaped this stuff unscathed. Is we blessed. We out here in this big house, nice fat studio. Why you want to go over there? Why you want to go back over there? He was just like, man, it's just was too bored. He was just bored, you know. And he had everything, you know, we out here, swimming pool tables, you know, game rooms, everything. But it's just something about that hood. It's just, you know, that adrenaline rush when you're over there. That it took me a while to have to, you know, get over that. You know, I didn't want to leave for years, you know. And you just have to grow up. Like I said, I just go back to my manager talking to me, me having a good manager who kind of woke me up and got me into that business mode of, back, you know, start a label, get your business license, do this, do that, pay your taxes. You pay your taxes, you can do this, you can get a house, you know, and create, you know, opportunities for some of these other dudes to get them up out the hood. And, you know, and I just listened to him. Hitman didn't want to listen to me. And, you know, it was just bad that, you know, he had to pay for it in that type of way going over there. And I used to tell him all the time, you know, like, bro, you out there. You know, you out there leaking, you slipping, you the biggest target. They won't hit, man. They won't you. They ain't worried about all them other little dudes that you hanging around with. They won't you because of who you is, you know. And they know that it'll hurt as far as us being a group. We already had lost Mr. C, and he was pretty much filling the shoes that Mr. C pretty much took on his part as far as in the RBL. And, yeah, there's one thing led to the next, and a whole bunch of events took place. And like I said, they end up seeing him driving through, he wasn't paying attention, that they was watching him when he drove through. They knew what kind of car he was in, and they seen the car, they jumped in, and up, and they pretty much scored. And yeah, it was one of those things where it just, to this day, it's just, man, it's, every time I think about it, it kills me just to think of, man, if he was, how big he would have been as an artist, because he was so dope, so talented, and it just, the rhyming and everything just came so easy to him that, you know, he would have really blew up, you know, whether we had the RBL thing still going or not, you know, just him as a solo artist, man, he could have went so, so far. Nowadays, when I look at dudes like the J. Cole's and the Kendrick Lamar's and all them, like, it may remind me of that tier MC. You know, he like one of those top tier MCs, man. His just lyrical ability was just man, phenomenal. So yeah, it just kills me every time I think of what could have been.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your honesty. And like I said, I do a lot of things for our young listeners because for whatever reason, there's a lot of like just movies and television shows and just so much that's glorifying prison life and death. And so when I find instances like this, and because you afforded me an opportunity to ask you, you said I could ask you any questions. I apologize that it took you back in that moment. I didn't want to, you know, I don't want to take you that far down the rabbit hole, and I hope I didn't, you know, kind of.
I don't know, except to say.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. But I do want to just ask you the last question, and that is, what do you want to say to people who are from environments such as that, who want to give back, or who think that it will prove a sort of allegiance if they stay in the area, because there are people, Nipsey died in 2019, there are people, you know, who can't handle your celebrity, your success. What is the one message that you want them to hone in on? If you could say something right now, speak to our audience, for those people who want to really give back to the community and do something for the people.
What I would say is you can do stuff. You can do it from afar. You don't have to live there, you know.
Right.
You can always go back, participate with boys clubs, the little community centers. There's all types of programs that you can go be a part of. You don't have to actually live with your foot planted on the pavement in the hood all day, every day, and just serving yourself to the streets on a silver platter. That's how I kind of look at it. It's like, bro, why is you even over there serving yourself on a silver platter to a lot of these snakes and these dudes that, hey, you know, at least try to create opportunities, try to catch some of these younger kids, you know, the ones who's 16 and under or whatever, try to create opportunities, get with some of the council members or something, and, you know, some of the gym directors over there who be running the gyms and the boys clubs and all that, just, you know, who want to help do the bike giveaways, backpack giveaways during school time, the turkey giveaways, whatever, doing Thanksgiving. You know, just contribute that way. You know what I mean? You ain't got to feel like you got to go over there and hold the pistol and yell out the name of your street or your neighborhood or your gang or whatever, man, to feel like you're a part of something, you know. And that's all fake, man. It's just fake love. It's just all an illusion. And all you, once you're in jail, you doing that time. But I went to Log Cabin, and my cousin, who I used to be gang banging with, and he went to YA for his 3 years. Wasn't nobody coming up there, nobody suffering but my mom, you know what I mean, and my girlfriend at the time. That was it. Them the ones whose hearts was broke. And it was like, the dudes didn't care about it. But as soon as I stepped out, they was happy, like, oh, we got a soldier back now. You know, he come back, he in shape. You know, I was at worked out while I was up there. They feel like, oh, okay, we got somebody to be on the front line now. Now, you know, all they want to do is throw you back out there on the front line to fight for them and take up for them so they could look good at the parties and in front of the females. And all that is just fake, man. That's phony. All you're doing is setting yourself up for a downfall, man. If you want to really do something for your neighborhood, it all start with, like, I was seeing Killer Mike talking about, like, man, you know, it's all on you preparing yourself, making yourself available to vote and stuff, and voting certain council members in, and voting locally to change some of these laws and, you know, getting certain programs accepted around the communities and stuff to where they ain't sending this money elsewhere and pocketing that money behind the scenes, man, to where we trying to open up a few programs to save these kids while they're young, man, because if not, once the streets get them, ain't nothing you can say. They're dropping out of school, they're getting a pistol, they're getting high, and it's like, ain't no talking to them. And then it's like, man, they're going to have to learn the hard way. So I wouldn't, man, get away from that hood. That hood mentality, man, is not it. All that trying to be hyphy and going dumb and trying to get a murder under your belt. Everybody nowadays, it used to be like real rare when I was coming up for somebody to be a murderer. Right? And like, they respected somebody who was a murderer. Like, oh, man, he done killed the dude. He done killed the dude. Now everybody, he murdered somebody. He murdered, like, everybody in the neighborhood saying they got a murder under their belt. And it's like, that's like something to brag on instead of saying, like, yo, he got a you know, a doctorate, or he got a this type of degree. He graduated out of high school, or he graduated out of college, and he went to that. Like, it's like they want to respect the killer. It's like, it just don't make no sense to me now, that's, especially looking back on it. You know, it's just like, man, I look back at how dumb I was, and I just was putting everything at risk. I wouldn't even be here right now for my daughter if I'd have just really fell for that trap. So, you know, and I learned from all these things I had to go through, and I learned from other people's mistakes, you know, too. You know, I don't watch dudes around me who have made big mistakes and messed their life up. Dudes who was way more talented than me when it came to rapping, but they wanted the gangbanger, they wanted to sell a bunch of dope, and they got caught up. And now I'm seeing them now getting out, and it's like they don't know what to do. They're too old to rap. They're 40-something, almost 50, and don't know what to do. They done went to jail for so many years, and even the technology, they still trying to play catch-up on, learn how to work an iPhone. So it's like, don't fall for that, man. Do not fall for the okey-doke. You know, worry about your family.
Yeah.
Family, your immediate family is first. Do not worry about them street mm-hmm. dudes, because that is not your real family. They don't care about you. You just got to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I appreciate you for your honesty. Yeah, because trauma porn is the new addiction, and it's really, really sad that that's such a big thing now. And there are too many lives being sacrificed, too many minds. But I thank God for you, because experience is the best teacher, and I'm not saying I'm happy that you went through that, but I am happy that you graduated from that. So thank you so much for addressing the young people who tune into our show. And also, like you said, a lot of the 40, 50, 60-year-olds they don't quite get it. And they think that, that is the way. So I appreciate that. So I'm going to switch gears just a little bit, and I'm going to have a little fun, because you mentioned some words, me being from the South, I was not familiar with. I really, really enjoy watching your video. The Bammer Weed video, I like that. You guys look like you had a good time. You had me rolling. I think I died and rose again when you said that punk-ass Negro, there are only two things that you smoke. And then you actually put the guy's face up. I was like, how did he get him to play that part?
Right.
I would have been like, hell to the no, you ain't about to put me in that scene. But that was so funny. That was hilarious. Yeah, you guys did a good job on the visuals, man. You really told the story. And I think it's one of those things that will never age, because I had fun with it in 2019. So, yes, big up to you there. So what is a dank? A D-A-N-K. What is a dank?
Dank is just chronic. That's what we that's where we're now. It's more like the high grade weed now that everybody smoked. That was considered dank back then. Dank was something that smelled skunky, light green. It was like real skunky, smelled like a, you know, skunk, and that's pretty much what they like the OG Kush of today. That's what it was mm-hmm. back then. And the opposite of dank was Bammer, you know. So Bammer is basically that brown weed, that gold weed, it looked like, I would say, looked like rolled up wood, broke down wood when you break down a piece of bark. That's pretty much what Bammer was, with a lot of seeds in it. So, yeah, anything brown, pretty much. They got some green Bammer, too, though. Don't get me wrong. They got some green and some gold Bammer, too. But, back then, it was just like a lot of brown weed that we ended up start calling Bammer, that just used to pop when you roll it up. Dank didn't have seeds in it. Bammer did. You know, so.
Oh. Yeah, thank you so much for doing that, because, yeah, you mentioned the color. I don't smoke a drink, so, I had fun just learning new terms. And then there was a word in there, zag. I wrote that down. I was like, damn, I don't know what that means either. So, you know, I had like
what word was that?
List. Zag. You said zag, Z-A-G, I think
oh,
it was.
Oh, rolled up in a zag. Zag is a zigzag.
It was a lot of stuff on there that I had a good time just looking. I like how you had the police recording on there. Yeah, good job. Kudos to you. And I want to bring in, like I said, somebody who is definitely an expert as it relates to this topic. And you'll know why when we catch him on the other side. But for the sake of time, I'm going to go on and bring him in now. But I won't. I have to do it after I give him his official intro, his Tuesday intro. Here we go.
Okay.
Welcome back, Commander.
What?
You got a prescription for this?
Yeah.
Where is that?
Where is
that?
It's
where?
I
take your ass, dear. You know that?
What?
Look at this.
That's not my cigarette,
this
man.
This cigar weed.
Well, it looks like a cigarette.
Smoke weed every day.
Oh, that's hot. That's hot.
Yes, welcome, Kilo the Great. How are you doing, sir?
Well, you already know. I'm doing excellent. It was a great interview, man. You did your thing interviewing Black C, going back down memory lane, and it was dope. But I'm doing good. I'm excellent. I'm on that level as always, you know. So I really wanted to ask Black C why I got you here, brother. And first of all, let me say shouts out to you, man. Much love, because without the things you all did, it wouldn't be no us. Like the new rappers, people in the game trying to make it in the game, whether they're trying to be signed to a label or whether they're trying to go the indie route and be independent. Right. So in most West Coast, you all paved the way for the independent, because the West Coast leads the way in pretty much independent artists that's not signed to no major labels. And that's a West Coast way. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the Bay Area. So let me pay homage to that. But I wanted to I know before Valerie opened my line, before she opened my line, she brought up the Don't Give Me No Bammer, right? And, you know, like she said, she didn't know what Bammer meant, like the zigzag, you know, which is the paper. So it was things she didn't know. But I wanted to ask you this, man, in Complex. Complex did a article on the 50 greatest songs of the Bay Area, right? And so when I heard you was coming on the show, I went, looked up the list to see if you was on the list. And you were on the list. RVL Posse, Don't Give Me No Bammer, is number 30 out of 50, of the 50 greatest. The 50 greatest Bay Area songs. You all are number 30 with No Bammer. And I learned something from doing my research is that originally it was Don't Give Me No Bama Joint. We don't smoke that shit in Hunter's Point. But then you all changed it to get more of a citywide, worldwide feel. And it ended up, and the song ended up taking off, doing numbers, going bananas off that one switch. So can you tell our listeners and tell us, like, how did that come about, the switch? Who said, man, we need to change this line to incorporate everybody? You got it, let's get it.
Well, I ended up doing that. You know, like I said, the gang banging thing was going off. We had the Frisco Gang Wars going off from like 87 to like 89. So when I got out of Log Cabin Ranch, this boys' ranch, juvenile detention center ranch, when I got into the music, I ended up doing it. You know, we was doing our thing locally, and all I was concentrating on was Hunter's Point. We had a song called HP Is My Home, which was Hunter's Point Is My Home. We had songs called Rolling Through the Turfs of HP. So we was pretty much just kind of singling out Hunter's Point because the gang stuff was still going on. So we didn't even really care about giving credit to the other side, Fillmore, or Sunnydale, or none of them other places in the city. But then once we start making the music and I end up going to the real studio and start really creating the real studio, it just came over me. I was like, man, we ain't going to go nowhere, be able to take this, you know, out as far as nationally or internationally if we don't really incorporate the whole San Francisco. We got to be one, like Oakland was. I was looking at Too Short and Ant Banks, a lot of them over in Oakland. They was together. They was doing songs together. They was doing a lot of stuff together. So that kind of woke me up to where it's like, man, I got to switch arms, because everybody was already, the song was just big locally, Don't Give Me No Bammer Joint. But I was like, man, you know, I need to pull the city in. So I'm just going to go on and just switch it up. And Mr. C wasn't on the original one, the Don't Give Me No Bammer joint. He came about when I ended up doing it, switching it around once we became RBL and I brought the song, because it came off of one of my solo project I was working on when it was Don't Give Me No Bammer joint. But when me and Mr. C got together, I switched it up. We took it was two other dudes on there, a dude named Madman. It was a dude named T-Rob that was on the song before Mr. C. So I took them off, put Mr. C on it, switched up the hook, and you know, the rest was history. And it ended up actually stopping the gang wars. One of my boys, Lonnie Green, who was from Fillmore, ended up reaching out to JT the Bigger Figure and, you know, Rapping Forte, all them dudes, folks from over on that side, and we brought them over to Hunter's Point. And, yeah, ended up causing a truce. And from there, man, it was like the rest was history. We haven't been at each other since that day. Once we brought it together in Bammer, we did that because the whole city was supporting it and playing it, man. We had people going to school down in Atlanta, going to Clark and more houses and all that, going through this program called the Mega Boys Club, and all our folks from out this way was taking it down there, man, just really representing from all sides, Sunnydale, Lakeview, Hunters Point, you know, Fillmore, Trail Hill, wherever projects they was from, they was taking it down there, man. And then, yeah, I'm glad I made that move, because it wouldn't have never happened like that if I'd have left it how it was. They wouldn't have wanted to play it. They wouldn't have cared. So, yeah, it was just, you know, something brilliant I thought of, and it worked out.
Right, right. And it's dope, man. And it's funny that Valerie went to that line, because that's one of the most famous lines from the song. There's only two things that I smoke, a big dad nigga and a pocket full of end up. So that's one of the dopest. That's one of the dopest lines from the song, bro. And, like, we used to bang it, and shouts out to everybody stationed at Travis Air Force Base right now. But we used to bang it on bass, man. That was one of the songs we played on bass when we was in Fairfield, man. I was stationed at Travis Air Force Base in Fairfield. So, you know, we used to get it in out there, you know, do big things, man. But being from San Francisco, man, do you think the gang violence or the violence stem, like, pretty much people felt like they had to be hard to make a name for themselves, because San Francisco, a lot of people who ain't never been to California, been to Frisco, associate that with, like, the LGBT movement.
Yeah.
So do you think that was more of a reason for the Young Gladiators to really act out, to give Hunter's Point, to give San Francisco a name?
Yeah, that is exactly what it was. That's why we kind of mentioned it. We got a few lines in our, like, I ain't no joke. We like saying all the facts on the other side of town. Like, they associate us with the Castro district. Like, so we always felt like we had something to prove, period, just in the Bay Area. You know, even the Oakland, like, we used to really go at it with Oakland a lot, trying to earn our respect. Like, you know, because a lot of dudes, like the dudes before us, used to leave out, or if they in jail, they go to the pen or somewhere. They won't say they're from San Francisco. They'll say the Bay Area or something like that. Or if they go out of town to relatives, how they used to be kind of scared to say Frisco. Me and Mr. C was like, dude, we finna rep this Frisco. You know what I mean? We finna rep this to the fullest. You know, because even when we used to go out there, we used to get in. We used to go to Detroit and do shows. And dudes were like, oh, y'all, ain't there a lot of gays out there? And it's like, dude, that's way on the other side of town. Like, we got projects. We got probably damn near more projects in L.A. I'm talking about real concrete jungle project buildings, like, out there, a whole bunch of them. Like, you know, but people don't, you know, they think about the tourist part, the Pier 39. If they ain't talking about Quake Towers and the cable cars, that's what they associate Frisco with tourists and. And like you said, the gay part, you know, the LGBT community out there on Castro. But, nah, but when you go way over the other side, over by the water, over to the Fillmore side, man, yeah, you'll be caught up thinking that it's all sweet around there. So, yeah, we definitely felt like we had something to prove. And a lot of that kind of ignited, too, just from us watching Colors and, you know, a lot of the movies that came out kind of helped, too. You know, so we just started really going at it with each other and with Oakland and with Richmond, you know, a few of them we had, and with East Palo Alto, You know, we was like, man, hold on, don't get it twisted. It's Frisco, this shit is real out here. So, yeah, that was something we felt we had to prove, though, to get away from that label of us being like a gay city. You know what I mean?
Right. So right now, what is Black Seed got cooking right now? You know, we didn't talk about RBL Posse, RIP, Mr. C, RIP, Hitman. So now, Black Seed, I know you did a lot of solo work, like you said, even before RBL, because the Bama Weed, don't give me no Bama Joy, came from one of your solo projects. So what is Black Seed doing right now?
As far as now, I'm just doing shows. Like, you know, we just came from a show with DJ Quick last week. We did a show with DJ Quick and Egyptian Lover out in Reedley, California. We got a show coming up this weekend in Santa Clara. And the week after that, we got a show in Long Beach with Too Short and Dub C, Second to None, Yo-Yo, all them. So I'm just trying to really just stay on that old school circuit, dealing with places like K-Day, who throw like them Rock the Bell concerts and Crush Groove concerts, besides doing, you know, our own little, running around on our own little circuit, you know, because the Mexicans love us, man. You know, we've been really just kind of like servicing them really a lot. Like a lot of our markets we go to, we notice it's like there's been a big Latino fan base. So that's what I've been kind of zeroing in on, that demographic, just kind of like pressing up, you know, Bluebird shirts. I've been moving a lot of merchandise, hats, shirts, stickers, and just doing a lot of licensing deals like now too, because one thing about the Latino community, they spread, they like pass us on to the younger generation. You know, it ain't so much like that in the Black community. Like, a lot of them don't know that we've been still working. They'll be like, oh, y'all ain't came out in hella long. Like, I ain't heard about y'all in a while. And but when you go to the Latino community, they love, like, even right now, one of our songs, they re-bringing it back and kind of blowing it up. Ever since Snoop Dogg played it on his page, it's a song on our first album called A Lesson to Be Learned, where we used, like, the Sugar Hill Gang beat and redid it in our version. But they done damn near made that as big as Bama Weed and Bluebird nowadays, now, you know. So it's like then took on a life of its own. So we just been pretty much, what I've been doing is just kind of marketing, you know, pushing my store and just really selling a lot of the No Bama merchandise, a lot of the Bluebird merchandise, and, you know, repressing up, doing the full color album t-shirts. We done just released vinyl now. The DJs is going back to the vinyl. So we done pressed up a bunch of vinyl. We pressed up like probably 2,000 copies. They sold out real fast. And we just pressed up a couple more. And so that's really what I'm doing. As far as new music, not so much. I got a few young artists, you know, H2MG, AR. They got like their little H2MG new movement. I'm trying to get behind them and kind of like, you know, mentor them and show them the way of doing things. And I'm just pretty much in the background, just really just trying to ink these deals, man, with this licensing stuff. Because the licensing stuff is a big thing now, that even the skateboarders, like the skateboarders love our music. You know, that whole little underworld, what they got with the skateboarders, that we done did a deal with, like, we did a joint venture with LRG. We did one with this skateboard company called FTC for the city out here, where we did a few things with them, and we licensed a couple of things with Thrasher. A couple of they came to us about 3-4 times to license our, a couple of our songs, and they snowboard and skateboard documentaries and videos. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. And Real Skateboards too, I'm not forgetting, give a shout out to Real Skateboards, we did a deal with them. So yeah, it's just about licensing now, man. And we're in the process of doing something with Boogie Cousins. He just got in touch with us. He's trying to license Bluebird for something that he's working on. I don't know all the details just yet, but I know Thizzle just got at me and told me that he's trying to license the song for some type of documentary or something about the Bay Area that he's doing. So that's really, been where the money been at, just shows, merchandise, and doing licensing deals. So that's really caught my interest. I might, you know, I still do verses for people here and there, but I ain't really been focused on no project as far as me trying to do a solo album or anything like that. It just ain't really worth it right now to me. You know, I might do a song now. You know, nowadays you can just do a song and fly it up on YouTube, or Spotify or iTunes or something. So I might work on a single here and there. You know, I just ain't really been that motivated ever since to really like this new sound, like this new trap era. It ain't really my thing. So, you know, I like it. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of artists I like that's in that genre of music. But I just don't feel like just putting nothing out in this climate right now. I'm trying to just get behind some of these young dudes who this is what they do and this is like their time. So yeah, that's really what I've been up to lately.
And that's dope, man. And shouts out to you for doing that, man, paying it forward, getting behind the young gladiators who out there doing it now with this new wave of music, this new sound that is going on. What I do want to ask you, man, is being that you've been down for so long supporting the cause of cannabis, are you linked or doing business with any dispensaries or anybody like that who wanted to, license the song, use the song as like a campaign, a slogan for any dispensaries? Are you plugged in like that? Because I know California is one of the states that's legal for recreational use.
Oh yeah, we definitely tapped in with that. We actually trying to release our own line, which I kind of got on it on the late. I'm kind of late to the party on it. I should have been doing this, but I was just trying to find the right person to collab with. But we collabing with this new company name. I don't even know if they want me to say it, but hey, I don't care. It's a company called Privileged Cannabis that we trying to get with, and we trying to do a couple of like No Bammer vape pens, a No Bammer line of like, you know, we're going to have our own No Bammer, the RBL's No Bammer Gelato, RBL's No Bammer Red and Keg, RBL's No Bammer OG. So we're trying to put that in the works right now as we speak, and we're trying to come with our own exclusive strand. That's what's really been taking us long, because we just didn't want to put our stamp on a bunch of these strands that's already out. So we're trying to come up. We're working with this place called CSI Humboldt, where they know how to marry certain strains of weed. You might want to put a gelato with a biscotti or an OG with a cherry pie and see what you can come up with. And, you know, so that's what they do. So, yeah, people follow them on IG too, CSI Humboldt. They vicious when it comes to creating strains and stuff. So that's what we're working on. You know, I wish I would have did it a while ago. I just was kind of sleeping on that. I wasn't really paying attention. Now everybody out here really doing a lot of these artists in the Bay Area, man, got their own little line of cannabis now. But, you can never be late really with that. Man. It's just all about having some top shelf and, you know, putting it out there, marketing it right. You market it right and get the right people to stand by it. And to sample it, and you know, it's off to the races. So, yeah, we definitely doing that. Got to. That's a must.
Indeed.
You can call it Bluebird and Bam Bam.
Now we can't have Bam Bam. We can't. It got to be No Bam Bam if we do.
But no, that's gonna be like the new generation, because you know they got like the Juul, the JUUL. You know,
right.
Yeah, they got that out. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can mm-hmm. put out that Bluebird and that Bam Bam, and it will replace the Bammer.
Right, exactly. You know,
well,
you got
look,
some things
well,
in the work, man.
Well, look, bro. I was born in the Bay, bro. Berkeley, California. Shouts out to the Bay. I love the Bay. Got ties to the Bay. My whole family in the Bay right now. So when I come to the Bay, bro, I'm going to have to get with you, bro. And I have to, you know, let you know whether your strain is a good strain, if it's a Bammer strain or not.
Yes, sir.
You know, or if it's top shelf. Do you feel me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's all good, man. Tap in with me when you're out here, man. We definitely.
Man, that's
man.
Most,
it's definitely top shelf.
All right, most def. Now, man, we didn't come to the end of the show. But I'm going to pass you back over to Valerie. But it's been cool. All my loved ones out there, you know what time it is. It's been real. Follow me on all social media sites. It's your boy, Philo the Great. T-H like foam. E-L-O-T-H-E. GREAT. And as always, get with it or quit it. Barbecue and me will do some will, some won't. Some do, some don't. You got a problem with anything, you got two choices. Either check it or reject it. All right? I'm gone. Valerie.
Hey, I want to ask you one question before we go, because this is a controversial subject. You mentioned, like, majority of your audience nowadays are Latinos, right? And and I watched a documentary on J-Lo, and they said that they had a huge problem once upon a time with her using the N-word. And yours is kind of riddled. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's everywhere. Do you have a problem with other races using the N-word, or is it okay if it's in song? How do you address that or approach that?
Well, yeah, it just depends. Like, where we at, like, we grew up with a bunch of, like, in our neighborhood, we grew up with a bunch of Samoans and Mexicans and stuff, and we didn't trip off them saying it. I guess when it comes to minorities, you don't really worry about it. It just depends on who it is. I know, like, we had a few Asian friends who used to try to say it, and they kind of got checked quick. Like, when it's white person, it's zero tolerance. No, you can't say it. But it just depends on who. Like, if you Dominican or Puerto Rican or something like that, they get a pass on it.
Part
like
of
Mexicans,
the same struggle.
They get a pass on it, huh?
Part of the same struggle, the same, like, they got dropped
right,
off.
That's
you know,
what I'm saying.
We all from
exactly.
Africa kind of, okay, I got you.
Exactly. So it's like that, you kind of get a pass, you know what I mean? But anybody else is like, no, zero tolerance with it. It's like, man, you better not let me hear you saying nothing like that. No, do not do it. But like I say, the Samoans that we grew up with, or Usos, yeah, they say it all. They say it all the time. We never even questioned it. It was just like it just come right out, and we didn't care. You know, so it just depends, you know, on who it is. But no, we don't trip on all other races. Some of them get a pass, some of them don't, and it just depends on too. You could be a Mexican, and if you kind of like. If you kind of use it, if it ain't like a what's up homie type of way, yeah, some blacks mm-hmm. take that personal too, you know. So, yeah, it just all depends, you know. But for the most part, nah, we out there and our fans is coming up. And most of the time, I ain't never really heard them saying it. Really, they don't really say it too much. Like, they just be, what's up homie? They maybe say homie. They don't really be, oh, what's up my nigga? And nah, they don't really do that unless they kind of from the hood, but most of them they kind of like be saying homie. They don't really.
But no, like in your song, because I think it was Kendrick Lamar invited like this white girl on the stage, and he had
right,
her singing
right.
the lyrics, and then yeah, she said the N word, and it was like everybody paused, you know. So
well, they got
like
to know
that,
how to censor themselves. You know what I mean? I mean, I understand that. I mean. Some people just say, I done been around people where they done drunk and they done just singing a song and they, hey, my nigga, whoop it. I just won't say that. I mean, hey, we having fun right now. I ain't going to like, hold on, stop the music. Wait a minute. You just said the end. Nah, I ain't going to do all that. But, you know, it just depends on where we at, how it came out, you know. And most of the time, if it's at a concert, man, I'm pretty much going to let it slide. I ain't going to say nothing. I'm going
right.
to I ain't gonna break the fun with something that's just negative like that. Like, all right, wait a minute. Hold on. She said the N-word. Nah, we're going
right.
to keep rocking. Mm-hmm.
Right. I love, like, how descriptive you are. I love your energy when answering the questions. Like I said, I really appreciate you being so genuine and all your answers being so authentic, because I could tell it's coming from the heart. And just real quick, I won't hold you long. I like mm-hmm. it when I feel comfortable with a guest, and then I feel like they can address issues that, because it is censored a different way. I'll use your word. Censored a different way when it comes from a celebrity. We're having a lot of problems nowadays with police brutality. And a lot of your songs address that. And so there was a message, much like an NWA, but, you know, I don't know if you think that the culture, the climate has changed so much, or if you think that, you know, there should be this this divide still, and we should walk, you know, cautiously when you know, affiliating ourselves, associating ourselves with police or being in certain scenarios. Do you feel like it has changed? And also, what do you want to say to people? I'm trying to think of the best way. I've been tap dancing since the beginning of this interview because, like I said, I try not to put words in the guest's mouth. I know what I want to say because I'm just real. I'm brutally honest. I just want to come out and ask. But I also don't want to, you know, dictate what it is that the guest says just because my activism wants to scream and, you know, and say, and I want to say what I want to say. But in this age, with all that's going on, do you think that what's the message you have if you could speak to police officers and also to black people? I can't even say black men or women because they just attacked a pregnant woman in front of her little baby.
But
what do you have to say to? Right. That was hard to digest. But what do you have to say if police officers are listening? And then also, what do you have to say to black people? Because we don't know when it's going to happen and what we need to do. Hands up, hands down, pants up, pants down. You know what I'm saying? You don't know.
Oh, man, that's kind of hard.
Do you have anything to say?
I don't know, because that's kind of hard because, I mean, you got good cops and you got bad. It's cops in my family. You know what I mean? Mr. C's son is a cop right now. He became a San Francisco police officer. You know what I mean? And I know he's a good dude. So I just think police need to think more like him. I think as these younger generations get older and you get more, they get more diverse within the police department. We get more blacks on, more Latinos on, more minorities on, women, whatever. I think it might start changing and this might become some of the past, but it's just in certain areas, it's just when it's just predominantly white, I think you just gonna have that problem. It's just something it just can't be fixed. But as far as like when we were saying fuck the police, like even the Bluebird song, it's really talking about the boys in blue. That's where the Bluebird come from. You know, it's us talking about the police.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what does that mean, Bluebird on my shoulder?
Bluebird,
I get it now.
Yeah, it's like having a chip on your shoulder with the police. It's like Bluebird on my shoulder. We can call the police boys in blue. A lot of the gangbangers thought we was talking about Crip and Blood, like we was talking about the Crips or something. But nah, Bluebird, well, they used it for that, the gangbangers. But me and Mr. C, when we came up with that, it was us talking about the police, you know. And it's just that they used to come through. They weren't really beating us up or nothing, but they used to plant dope on us and do a lot of dirty stuff like that to try to get you to snitch and tell them. They know you on probation. They coming in your house without a 1035 search warrant and all that, and they just didn't care. So now it seems like it done got worse. It's just like it's done got crazy with these videos. And you would think that they get a little more incognito and more quiet about it by being all these cameras, phones, and cameras around. It's like, damn, what was y'all doing when it wasn't no cameras? I just can imagine
but
what was
also
going
too,
on.
They're getting, I just had this conversation with Philip. They're insulting our intelligence. You know the story with the pregnant woman. How dare the police chief say he's not exactly sure if it was excessive? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, he said that?
Services is a bit much because, yeah, he, you know, and the cops are back on duty. They're not even on administrative leave. Like, once upon a time, they would at least put them on leave while it was being investigated. But no, they were actually back at work later that day, next day. And then the mayor of the city came in, and she's like, she spewed out the same narrative that they normally give us. We apologize. We're looking into it, you know, and it's just, it never sends a message. It just seems like it's acceptable. So they just feel like, hey, you know what? I'm never going to be held accountable. I can get away with it. So let me just keep going. And that's why I'm saying I think we're going to have to turn to our people like you, our celebrities, to say something, because I think that it means something now that Jay-Z is actually going to pay for that couple's legal service.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
making
a statement right
there. And so I think it's
going
to take you guys doing something. Yeah, that's why I asked you that. I had to take this opportunity to address that because they're listening to you, but they don't seem common people. We're like roaches. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't care if you're pregnant, you're in front of your kids. They don't give a damn. And it is crazy.
Damn.
So, yeah, we're going to we need you guys, man.
I know, man. I've seen that every time I look at that. She's holding
something.
Her baby like, hold on, it's just hot ground. She wanted her to put the baby on the ground and all that. Oh, my God. It was just too much. That was way too much, especially for her to just have walked out of a store with something. The kid walked out. It ain't like the adult stole something and ran.
Yeah,
the
99 cents all. Yeah.
Oh,
and they followed her all
man.
The way home, guns a-blazing, ready, cussing her out, threatening to shoot the woman in the head. I was just like, and that's not excessive to you? It's like they don't even care anymore. And God, we could go all day with
I
that.
Know.
I won't hold you with
I
that.
Know.
But, yeah, we just, please, you know, whatever platform, I don't know what to do. And
yeah, we
Steve
all
Harvey
got to,
seems to be the mayor.
Everybody
got to
put their part into it, man.
Yeah. You still talking to E-40? He seemed to be the mayor
yeah,
over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy. He got to stand up, too. Like you said, people like him who really, really kind of like still, as far as current in today's hip-hop in the Bay Area and all
yeah.
that, it really got a platform. His platform is way bigger and louder than mine. They got to stand up, sort of like how T.I. and Killer Mike and all these dudes, David Banner and them, use their platforms to talk
yeah.
about a lot of injustice and stuff that's going on and what we need in the black
yeah.
community and programs and stuff. You know, we need that in the Bay Area. We don't really have a person like that. Mr. Fab tried to do it a little bit, but we don't really have a go-to person out here locally in the Bay Area who really willing to stand and fight for something like that, you know, out here. Mr. Fab, I give him credit because he trying to do it. He trying his best to try to play his part. But E-40 kind of like a lot of times just kind of mind his business and do what he do and kind of like stay out the way of a lot of stuff when it comes to politics and different certain subjects. But, you know, people like him and Short got to step it up and you know, throw their weight around a little bit because y'all got people who going to bag y'all up, you know. Don't get
yeah.
it. Y'all saying something.
Yeah.
Y'all use y'all power, you'll be real surprised on how many people are going to come forward for y'all, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I need to talk to 40 about that whenever we do get a chance to chat. But, yeah, that's my guy, man. He got my number. I got his direct number, and we chop it up, you know, from time to time.
Yeah.
There. So that's my
well,
guy.
Well, just be careful. Don't go as far as the Nipsey Hussle because I do believe they sacrificed that and scheduled that on April 1st, and that ain't no conspiracy theory. But I just feel like, you know, there's only so much you could do. So tread lightly and do as much as you can because I do think that they do respect the celebrity or the dollar or the rich. I don't know. But whatever it is, yeah, this is the hour when we need you. And the very last question, are your children, are they you know, anybody in your family following in your footsteps trying to get in the rap game?
Nah, I kind of, my daughter kind of had wanted to at one point. She was trying, but I
said,
no. Nah, I'm going to go to nursing school. I'm going to do, she's going to be a nurse now. She's the only one. Everybody else is doing their own thing. My other kids, my firstborn, my daughter, she was the only one that had the music bug. And that was because she was around me a lot in the studio. You know,
yeah.
watching Hitman and all of us. So she got the singing bug. She wanted to sing, but I was just like, man, this is too stressful. And I want you to do it as a something like a hobby. You know, do it when you know you got the studio at home, so you can always come in here and record. Always come in here and record. You know, so I want you to basically trying to find something else, get a career going. You know, this could be your hobby. Get a career going, and then you're going to always have this as long as I'm around. There's going to always be a studio in your garage, in the office, and somewhere where you're going to be able to do music. So Yeah, so we shut that down, and now she's been going to med school, doing her thing, doing that, which I'm happy about, trying to finish that up. So, yeah, nobody else right now. Nah, I don't want them doing that. Nah, I'm cool on this. I don't want them getting their feelings hurt and being stressed out and mad because they stuff ain't on iTunes or it ain't blowing up and nobody ain't paying attention to it or, you know, So, yep, they got their pops.
Yeah.
So just support me and what I'm doing and, you know, create your own lane doing something else.
Gotcha. And a happy belated Father's Day to you. Definitely. I hope you had a good day.
Appreciate it.
So, do you want to give any final words? Big shout out to Jeff Kwan, BTP Media. I appreciate him so much. Yeah, for all that he does, because he really goes hard for you guys over there in the Bay.
Right.
So I always make sure I take a moment to send some love to him and also to the community. But yeah, do you have any final words before I get your contact information?
Any people trying to get in the music game, just do it out of love, you know. Don't try to jump in this thing thinking you're going to get rich overnight. Just do it because you love to do it. Do it out of the love. And, you know, it'll happen for you eventually, you know. And just rest in peace, Mr. C, Hitman. You know, I'm out here still keeping this torch lit. And that's about it, you know, besides, like you said, the contact information is all they need. They want to stay in touch with us. It'll, you know, follow us on that IG at RBL Posse. And, yep, get on our website if y'all want some of the gear. Check out our store, www.rboposse.com. And, that's about it, man. Just appreciate you having us on, giving this opportunity to use your platform to tell our story and, to promote our sites.
Thank you. And the saddest part is I can't even solicit you to talk to the young artists out here because of the blatant disrespect that, like, the Kodak did for, and I know he didn't like the way that T.I. talked to him, but somebody needs to talk to these young kids, you know, too, because I mentioned YNW and Lil Durk, but it would be so nice if they had respect for the elders or the people who have paved the way, you know, like we have respect for our ancestors. Because we know that without them and without your sacrifice, we wouldn't have the opportunities we have. And I don't even feel comfortable asking y'all that anymore. I hate that because I don't want to feed you to the wolves, and then you go out there and these young kids disrespect you the way that, you know, Kodak Black. Maybe that may not
That's
be a good example. I don't know the whole
That's
story
what they
of that,
do
but
now. They get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They get a little respect and get a little fan base, and they feel like they're bigger than you. Like, you can't tell them that no more. That's all that fake love they get, boost their ego. And they feel like, you can't tell me nothing. I'm more popular than you. It ain't about being popular, man. I've been through a lot more. I had a lot more experience than you. I got a lot more wisdom than you. That's what I'm trying to share with you.
Yeah.
You be worried about
and could really help.
More followers, you know? Yeah, it could really help.
Exactly.
And
it's really
like
sad.
Sometimes you got to let them learn the hard way. They got to go to jail for murder or whatever. You know, like you were saying, YW Nelly, murder. You know, young Dirk is trying to get him on these little charges. And Kodak, look at him. After arguing with T.I. and going through what he's going through, they in there on no bail, you know. Even Soulja Boy, he learned a little bit now. He was out here a little stubborn. And they in jail. Some of them just got to fall on their ass and fall on their face and learn from their own mistakes. And then maybe when he get out, he might be like, you know, like Meek Mill. Now get a little smarter and be like, hold on, you know, it's time for me to get on the right side of this stuff and try to help some of these youngsters instead of leading their ass to hell, you know, so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I respect the Latino community. Like you said, they're passing it on to the next generation. I wish that was something that we could do, but. I guess it'll come in time. I blame us to a certain degree, but then I also blame the systemic programming, you know, that I know that that's being instilled and put in our heads to make us see ourselves and you know, look at each other a certain way. So I blame us, and then I don't. And it's just crazy. It's a never ending saga. But thank you so much, man. Big shout out to you. I definitely want to give you the biggest applause.
Break yourself, fool.
Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC.
3, 2, 1, coming in with the bangs. 2 dark skin niggas, not a motherfucking gang. Pimps with limbs, never know acid. You smoke dank, not the Bammer shit. Damn, that Bammer ain't no good. You might as well smoke some rolled up wood. And you laugh and said those lines was funny. But trip on the sense that I'm stressing your punk ass dummy. You with the program, can you see Bammer? Nothing but a scammer, false hot. Nothing but an untrue, a fear. Where everyday lie to thank for the claim to fame. Ain't it a gram that you seek to gain? Once knew a girl named Brenda. Smoking that Bammer was her everyday agenda. She used to laugh and giggle. Until Mr. C moved next to her building. I tried to get her, but she acted kinda shy. So I shared my dank. I got her real high. She invited me up to her room.
My nigga.
And for you bitches, honey boom, honey boom. We smoked more dank without a pause. And later that night, I was in them drawers. See, Frisco niggas ain't no punks. Put guts in our way, and they're gonna give up on Brenda's damn horn at the point. Couldn't handle the dank. The reason.
Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC.
Don't give me no Bammer joint. It's the Black Sea nigga getting straight to the point. I was chilling outside on a hot day. It was me and my niggas, just check what I say. Let's fade, let's go see the dank man. They'll fade if they is my friend. A few niggas pitched in.
Let's go to the store so I can get some gin.
Oh no, straight hen I gon' mine. With a little dab of coke and a nigga doing fine. So now we got a nitro, we up, yeah. Let's go get the bendo, info deep we creep. It's about to be a party in the 5.0 G. Nigga straight jet to the mirror. One nigga in the back had a St. Ice beer. Earlin' like fuck in my backseat. I made him buy 5 grams and clean up the mess. G straight hen dog with no chaser. Fuck that beer, ain't nothing greater. A, B, R name C. And you gotta pause when you get to the D. D for dank, D for drink, but not D for the dope that's stacking my bank. There's only 2 things that I smoke. A punk ass nigga or a pipe full of endo. I like nothing but the real McCoy, straight dank. Fuck a Bammer joint.
Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC.
Is it gold? Is it green? Is it brown?
No, it's black. Breaking them buzz down.
Or should I say them endo clusters? Never went home though, cause I'm an endo lover. Trip on the shit that I say. I go take a trip to go get the shit. D to the A to the N to the K.
Niggas know what's up.
So what more can I say? If it's in a Zag or a pipe, it's quite expensive, so you better smoke it right. Get a few niggas to fade. Find a cut or just zerp in a shade. And like me, belongs to a meal. Grab a 40 with the dank, cause it's time to get ill. It's better than crack cocaine. It ain't medicine, but it'll ease the pain. And if you find right, you in luck. That and the eyes got you amped as fuck. Now for the journey of quest. They're creeping for some sex, but don't forget the latex. Niggas like each other, lesser and lesser. But on the dank tip, let's come together. You call it herb, some call it Seth. But if it's called Bammer, don't smoke that mess.
Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weeds. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC.
What's a kid? The motherfucking Mr. C from Harbor Road, cheap. Just give me a couple of zigzags so I can roll a fat one and take a drag. Now I ain't got no time for playing. I just wanna smoke my dank and niggas always saying smoke that Bam. But what's that word by MC Hammer? Shit, it ain't prop. The nigga who sold it to you got you straight out gap. Now you're looking confused. I shoulda said baffled, but don't let it kill you. Cause a 100-point nigga who sold it to you, this smoke get straight to the head. And next you put head to bed. Then you start to dream and wonder you
and say to yourself,
damn, that tank was bumping.
Ah, look at that hoe, but don't open that door and let the contact flow. Niggas say that, while rolling in the ride at the same time. Listen to the bass line, by TC, and my nigga name, Black C. Pwn like D-O-P-E, send fresh rhymes for the RBL posse. SBI goes to kind of fat and listen soup. Well, I said it backwards, can I come smoother? That's that dank shit, time to pull another link. R-E-L, to the ninjas, our mission, to go and jack niggas. For the endo sacks, to be exact, we took them like straight max. See, we got straight to the point, cause we don't smoke no Bammer joint.
Don't give me no Bammer weed. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weed. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weed. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC. Don't give me no Bammer weed. We don't smoke that shit in a SFC.